nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
Okay. Today we're going to be talking about the material that in the model that we were discussing last time would actually impose a resistance to the transport of electrons or ions in the battery. Okay, and these corresponds to the electrolytes, the salts, and originally I was going to talk about separator materials as well, but then I realized that we had already done that, so I have it there at the end, but unless we do this too fast, I will just skip it, okay? We already spent a lot of time on it, so you would see it really more as a review than anything, okay? The current density that we've been discussing in this slide is written as, in the generic, more physics-like notation than the electrochemistry notation, we've been using that the current density goes as, in this case, as, is used as RT, we've been using kappa, in this case, this corresponds to the conductivity of the material. We have it like this, and we've been using, in this case, we can use the electric field, or you can use minus the gradient of the voltage, or the derivative of the voltage with respect to space, okay? And in this case, that total conductivity, that total opposition to transfer ions in the system is directly related to what's actually under the hood, okay? And in principle, the total conductivity, and I'm going to first put it in text form, is the sum of the contributions of every single ionic species that it's moving through the system. You can have, therefore, the electronic contribution, okay, you could have, in this case, from component one, charge species 1 contribution, and obviously you can go for charge species 2 contribution. Basically, any single ion that is moving in the system, being positive or negative, will add to the total conductivity of the system. Physically, that's what the intent of this sub T means. It means T stands for total. Okay, so you can think here of K for KE for electronic, then you can have here K1 for component 1, K2 for component 2, and so on and so forth. Okay? Each of these contributions corresponds to the mechanism, the defect through which this ion is able to hop in the material, either through a vacancy diffusion, so we're talking about a crystal, or through disclinations or other types of defects that, say, in the polymeric matrix may exist, through which the ion happens to hop from one charge defect to another one. Okay? Again, this is very generic. I'm not going to spend time describing specifically the atomistics of those effects, but just so you know that there are different contributions. Okay? In the slide that we have, in this case, you have the linear superposition of all the conductivities, again, referring to all the possible mechanisms that you have. In this case, for all the different species in the system, all the charged species. Some people also divide them based on the type of defect that contributes. Some people may even divide them on grain boundary contribution to transport, or dislocation contribution to transport, interstitial contribution to transport, vacancy contribution to transport. At that point, it becomes specifically on what type of description you're looking at to account for each of those specific types of defects. Okay? As the means for those ions to basically be transported. In general, we need those defects, because without defects, there wouldn't be able to be an open spot so that the ion can hop from one place to the other one. Okay? The relationship for an ionic species, not for an electronic species, has this form. Okay? Basically, that resistance or that, I'm sorry, that conductivity, in this case, you can see is directly related, if we're talking about an ionic species, to the diffusivity of that species, okay? And what charge that specific ion has, okay? What's the valence of that ion, okay? So, and you can see here the direct relationship into the diffusivity of that species in that medium, in the electrolyte, and how if you don't have any species actually dissolving the electrolyte, then there's really nothing there for it to hop into, okay? And well, in this case, it goes as the square of the valence. And well, if you go over the math, and really here the intent is that, let's see, if I say that the current really corresponds basically, there's a proportionality constant related to the actual mass flux associated to those ions, and typically people refer to that velocity or that rate at which those ions move proportional to some mobility times the applied electric field. That is the gradient of the voltage. And people, or at least originally Einstein, referred to that one as having that mobility proportional to the diffusivity and inversely proportional to RT. Okay? Again, I'm not going to go over the details on how that comes about. Okay? But physically, it has to do as to what you have a random walk of those species in this field of defects through which the ions are moving. Okay? One specific material science concept, I'm sorry, electrochemistry concept as well, that people need to include on this. People, what they typically do, okay, given what the total conductivity is and what the contribution of each of those components is, there is a number that is referred to as a transference number, okay? And as you have it up there, that transference number corresponds to the contribution from one specific species divided by the total conductivity of the system. Okay? Think of it as the fractional contribution from that component, from that species, from that type of defect into the transport of the system. Okay? And this number, the transference number, is reported as much, sometimes even more, than the actual conductivities of the system. What people typically report is the total conductivity and the contributions from a specific component, okay, and the transference number, okay, the fractional contribution. You notice how this is defined, right? If you look at the contribution up there, right, you have how it does relate to the diffusivities, but it's not equal to the diffusivities. Okay, so it's not the same to say this, it's not the same than to say this. You can't say that. Does that make sense? This is a common mistake that I find in other classes that people make. Okay, does that make any sense? If I, since there's a CI associated to each of them and there's a valence associated with each of them, then it's clear that if I take substitute that relationship you have on the board in here, you will never have this relationship. It will never be equal to each other. Okay, unless for very, very specific cases. Okay? Okay. So, and again, depending on how you account for how each of these contributions stack up, okay, you may have that the system is limited by the transport of one species with respect to the other one. Except for the electronic contribution, okay, and here we're talking about scatter of electrons in a crystalline lattice, not necessarily through a motion of one defect from one lattice side or one interstitial side or one vacancy side to another one. In this case, the electrons are just scattering and basically colliding against the atoms or ions themselves. Okay, except for that one, all the other ones you can write in the form you have up on the board. Okay, open the screen. Okay? The trick, of course, is to be able to report these numbers or each of these individual contributions. Okay? Ultimately, when you have when you are assembling a battery, and we're talking about here the mixture of electrolyte and carbon black and binders, okay, in that mixture, the electrolyte will basically have this contribution, okay, all the ionic contribution, okay, and the carbon black will have mainly that contribution. The mixture will give you a total conductivity, which is the sum of all the ionic and electronic, but in the electrolyte graphite binder mixture, you have these two parallel pathways, okay, where electrons are traveling in one phase and ions are traveling in another one. They meet at the surface of the battery particle, but if they meet in between, they would, of course, since they are ionic, they would, they have opposite charges, they would react and you will have a neutralized lithium in between. You don't want that. You want them really to transport until they get to the surface of the particle and then react there. Okay. Typically, the limit is not this one. It's not the electronic one. Typically, what happens is that the electron travels really fast, you know, at relativistic speeds, right, and reaches the surface of the active material and sits there and waits for the ion, which in comparison, I mean, you compare an electron with an ion, the ion is massive, right? It has to hop through all these defects. It has to diffuse through, as you can see from the relationship up there, okay, until eventually it makes it to the surface of the particle, and then there's some additional step where it hops from the outside into the inside, that we also talked about that energy barrier, and then it reacts inside, okay? So those are the two parts that you have to distinguish, okay? And what I'm going to talk about, the numbers I'm going to show you in the next slide, corresponds mainly to these contributions over here, okay? So that you can notice the difference. Okay? Any questions before I proceed? Yes?
How is the current proportional to the square of the charge?
The square of the charge. In this case, let's see. The current is the square of the charge. Well, actually, if you have only ECV, I think you only get the mobility. You need the charge again in order to actually get the current. Okay. You don't seem convinced.
No.
Okay. Let me try to find a better argument, and I'll explain it next time.
One more question. Can we add the conductivities like this, because this will say that the resistors, the resistances are in parallel, because if you multiply...
Right. Yes, you can think that the... Yes, that's a good question. Absolutely. So, what you have in principle, you have... Think of it as you have all of these contributions acting simultaneously... they're all acting simultaneously. So if you try to account for the sum of the charge of every contribution, basically you think about it like this. The total current is the sum of the electronic current, right, plus the current contribution, the ionic charge associated to component one, and then plus I2. When you do that, and if you admit that current is proportional to the same electric field that you're applying to the whole sample, then the electric field contribution basically factors out, and you end up with the sum of all the conductivities, giving you the conductivity of the overall system.
But then we are only looking at one electrode at each part of this?
We're looking at one electrode, yes. In this case, we're looking just at specific materials.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, if you wanted to look at the conductivity of the overall battery, then you will actually have to start taking into account thicknesses and tortuosities, because in this case, we're just looking at that one phase.
Yeah.
Okay, if you wanted to actually talk about the face of the porous electrode, then you have to say, well, actually the electrode is really going to be that conductivity, okay, times, of course, the porosity divided by the tortuosity, right? So we're just looking at this term alone, right? This term, we're splitting it into all the components that it has, okay? And that's where all the material science is hidden, right, into what properties those have, okay? Okay, yes. Any other questions? Okay. Okay. Well, there are two types of electrolytes, as actually at some point we advertised. There are polymer-based electrolytes, and there are also ceramic-based electrolytes. Polymer-based electrolytes are the ones that are most widely used, are the most, every single lithium-ion battery that you have, it's a very, very good chance it's a polymer-based electrolyte. And the reason it became so industrially used or commercially used is because it's easier to process, cheaper. There's, you know, more return from what you put in there. From the technical point of view, it has a much higher conductivity at lower temperatures, okay? At room temperature, the conductivity that a solid electrolyte, a ceramic-based electrolyte, will have will be much lower than the one a polymer-based electrolyte will deliver you, okay? Think about of using that battery, say, well, right now outside, right, with the temperature that we have today. If I remember correctly, I think we woke up like at 19 or 20 degrees. If you had a ceramic-based electrolyte, it will not perform as well as if you have a polymer-based electrolyte. In both cases, well, you can see there's a 1 over T relationship there, okay? And the diffusivity actually has an Arrhenius-type dependence, so you would expect that the overall transport will drop significantly, okay, in this weather, right? So and it's a very good choice for to make batteries flexible. If you think about it, right, once you have actually made a battery, you know, you have put down a layer, then put another one, okay, and you want to put like this, you know, several meters of that into a can. Well, the only option you have is to roll it, right? And you can only do that if the material that you're putting there is flexible enough. The particles obviously will not be as flexible as one would want, but the electrolyte itself would allow for that composite to be flexible enough to actually put it in a can, okay? And that's one of the main advantages. Now, we've discussed this already. Electrolytes, organic electrolytes, polymer-based electrolytes, are prone for these side reactions that leads to these gases that eventually could become flammable, right? In combination with other side reactions that the battery has, may lead then also to other types of much more catastrophic failures that the battery may have. So the main advantage of the best electrolyte that people use is also the one that it's the less safer one, okay? Because you only need to reach around 100 degrees, and that's enough to destabilize it, and it could eventually, under the right conditions, catch fire, okay? So also, of course, it's mechanically compliant because it's so soft, so it's very easy to pinch it and introduce an internal short circuit, okay? That's a problem, too, okay? Then again, polymer-based electrolytes, organic electrolytes, are the most widely used electrolytes in the planet. Okay. Now we also have ceramic-based electrolyte. The main advantage is they're mechanically stiff. Okay, if you hit those, they're much harder to; they're more resistant to mechanical damage. Okay, they're temperature resistant. Instead of being able to reach 100 degrees centigrade, you can actually reach 200, sometimes even 250, maybe 300 degrees, and the thing will not catch fire. Okay, that is a good thing. Okay, that gives you more stability. Okay, if you're trying to make thin film batteries, which we haven't talked about yet, it's a very good choice. Okay, because you can put a very small layer in a rigid substrate, so that because we're not in that case for a thin film battery, we're not intending to roll it. We just want to have that flat surface. That makes it very convenient. Because, and this is something that I purposely put in the homework this week, because the mechanical stresses allow you to suppress dendrite formation, and this one has a very large elastic moduli. It allows you to actually suppress those dendrites, right? Having such a stiff electrolyte. Okay. Now the disadvantages is that at low temperatures they deliver a relatively poor performance. The conductivity in this case is so low that the resistance basically increases. Okay, does that make sense? So if when that happens, when the resistance increases, then your losses are greater, and then your performance, the thickness, the porosity, the active material that you may have chosen for that specific current, operational current, will shift, right, as a result either of the low temperature, and this is not something that you desire to have. Okay, so those are the two main drawbacks. There are indeed people right now exploring high temperature ceramic electrolytes, and you can see that once you do that, then you really improve the safety factor here. Okay, the main disadvantage still is the processing of it, because you still want to roll it. Okay. You still want to shape it into a form that it's amenable for transporting. And, well, that will still be a challenge, right? And, well, in that case, trying to find ways to actually shape it into the right form becomes a critical part of battery fabrication. Okay? So, those are the two main types of electrodes. And then I'm going to show you some specific numbers here. This is just the different electrolytes from a paper that I posted already in the class website. I'm just going to go over the highlights. If you read carefully that paper, you will find a lot of little tiny details associated to each chemistry. Okay, I'm just going to go over the highlights. Okay, so in this case, you have this lanthanum lithium titanium oxide. Notice again, if you look at the x-axis, this is 1 over temperature. Interestingly enough, this oxide has conductivities that go, or usable temperature conductivities that go from 0 degrees centigrade all the way to 200 degrees. Okay, in this case, the ones that we use the most are in this window over here. Okay, notice that there's at least 2 orders of magnitude between the oxides. Okay, down here, okay, and the polymeric electrolytes. However, the phosphate-based electrolytes, you can see, actually have the chance of providing a much higher response. And notice again that the organic electrolytes, you can see how the tip, the left side of it, end roughly at 100 degrees C. Okay, above that, then the whole thing just phase transitions or catches fire, and then you have a problem there. Okay? And now, because I'm going to forget about this in a few minutes, PBDF stands for polyvinylidene fluoride. PEO is polyethylene oxide. LLTO or LTO is lanthanum lithium titanium oxide. Okay? These days, LTO is one of the most favored materials for this type of applications. And people are really trying to develop it. Okay? Let's see. Oh, yes, of course, that's PEO. And, okay. Now, the electrolytes themselves will not do much unless you put a salt in the system. Okay? What this salt does, it gives you the right fraction of defects that would allow for those ions to move in the electrolyte. If you don't put any salt in it, your conductivity will be very low. If you put too much salt on it, then you will not leave enough defects for the ions to transport. So there's always a sweet spot that is chemistry dependent that will give you the maximal conductivity or the conductivity that you require for your application. If you also put too much salt, you can also precipitate that salt. And if you precipitate that salt, then you will have this, I don't know, swatches of in your battery that will be completely isolated, because they will have phase transformed to something else that is not conductive either. Okay? So One of the most popular results are the one at the very top, LIPF6. Okay, and well, I think it's I guess obvious to say that it improves the ionic conductivity. I mean, that's the whole point of that salt. The same with LiCl04. Okay, if you recall the different materials and the different situations that we've been discussing, they both usually refer to the first one or the last one. Why? Because those are the ones that give you usually the highest conductivities, okay? And that's the one that people tend to use, okay, commercially speaking, okay? One that has become at least very popular these days, or people have been exploring it a lot, is this one is lithium bis oxalate borate, much easier to say, LiBob, okay? LiBob has the advantage that it gives you some improvement of high temperature performance. Okay, something very important, okay, is the reduction of the side reactions. So LiBob has that capability, okay, where PC or LiCl04 will not form into these additional phases. Okay, and of course, you definitely want to stabilize the SEI, right? If you remember, right, if we have an SEI that just keeps growing, that will also kill the battery. Right, and in the model that we were discussing last time, that contribution to thickness will definitely negatively contribute to the losses of the system. Okay, so you want to keep that at bay. At least you want it constant. Okay, so and again, very popular. Another option to LiBob is LiODFB. Okay, I'm not even gonna try to say it. The advantage of with respect to LiBob is that allows you to even reach even higher rates, okay? And it also has a corrosion inhibitor, okay, which is actually a good thing, okay? Here's another salt, okay? TTFP, it stabilizes LiPF6, okay? One important one is that it suppresses SEI formation, improves the capacity, okay? A very important one, if you reach that very high temperature, that 100 degrees, and you know that thing is going to catch fire, you want to at least delay the catching fire. So it's a fire retardant, and it suppresses the fire if used when up to 20%. If you overdo it, if you pour it more than that 20%, then and I don't understand that part. It actually does just stop doing what it's supposed to do. Okay, so You want to put some, but you don't want to put too much of it, okay? So at this point, if you think about it, it's like making a soup, right? You have your base liquid, your electrolyte, and then you put, say, some LiPF6 on it, and then you also sprinkle some TTFP. The LiPF6 is to improve the conductivity, and the TTFP is to basically make sure that thing at least, if it's gonna catch fire, you can wait some time, or you can get away from that for, with enough time. Okay. Then you have HFP, okay, which suppresses the crystallization of another salt called PVDF. Okay. And, those are the main salts, okay, that people use. Okay. Which fraction should you use? My suggestion is to go and look at the specific dependence of that salt with that specific electrolyte mixture, okay, and the impact on the overall conductivity. Typically, and these days you can find lots of tables showing you what the conductivity is going to be given an electrolyte mixture and with that conductivity. And in some cases, some of these mixtures are not even public. Some of them just happen to be trade secret, where basically they have the secret sauce for their battery, and unless you go and try to reverse engineer it, you will never know what that was. Okay. Any questions here? Okay. Yes.
So are those things always mixed, everything, but based on percentage? Like, for instance, 10% of this, 20% of
right.
This.
Right. Yeah. Typically, it's a molar percent. Sometimes they put it in volume fractions, if you may. If you look back at the papers we've been discussing, we have been discussing, they always give you the ratio of electrolyte mix, okay? Because they usually you don't use one single electrolyte, but you also mix those. And then they also give you the mixture of the two, sometimes maybe even three salts that they use, because they want to enhance this and suppress that, okay, so that they get the right response. Okay?
So another thing is, are we actually the assumption that everything is solid electric rather than liquid electric? Because in the previous slide, you're talking about mechanically, you know, that ductile, everything you're talking about as a solid.
Right. Well, what happens when you make these mixtures of electrolyte with binders and all these other things, you're also altering the viscosity of the mixture, and together with the particles, you end up with something that could, basically you could gel it, right, to the point in which it becomes solid-like, and even sometimes the interactions between those particles can become so strong that basically the whole thing just becomes a really very stiff mixture. Okay? Yeah. So does that answer your question? And, I think you had a question.
Are salts used in capacitors too?
Say that again.
Are salts used in capacitors too, or are they just unique to batteries?
I have read a couple papers where they tried to use some of these salts as part of, say, some capacitors. But in that case, what they want to do is basically just store the charge not inside the particles, just on the surface. So yes, I guess the answer would be yes. But in that case, the electrolyte should be such that you really want to extract a lot of current really fast, okay? And either you have a very small system so that your losses as a result of the distance that the ions have to transfer are really small, or you get something else that will allow you to get the charge really fast out of there. Does that make sense?
Okay.
I saw another hand up there. No? Okay. Okay. Thank you. Okay. So here we go with the next one. Okay. Now, these are typical values, so you have an idea, okay? This is in another of the papers that we posted. This is a paper by Sastry and co-workers. It's a very long paper. Not only talks about that paper, talks about the conductivities and all the different mechanisms associated to transport. That paper also talks about the diffusivities. They also propose some very simple models on how to describe them. The fact that they spend so many pages and so much effort to describing the electrolytes should give you an idea on how important that is, okay? And that's really the main point that I'm going to convey here, right? For example, LiCl4, okay, will not perform the same if I use it as a salt in a PC, okay, will not perform the same way. Okay, notice that in that case, the ionic conductivity, notice that in this case, the authors are very clear at specifying that we're talking about that half of the equation, not this one, okay? And the conductivity is 5.6 Siemens per centimeter, okay? But if instead you mix it, you dissolve it in a mixture of ECDMC, and you also have to say what are the fractions of this, okay? If you don't, of course, it depends on what fraction of EC and what fraction of DMC you have, you could have a conductivity of 8.4, which actually seems to be much better, okay? Here's another salt that I didn't talk about in the previous slide, LiASF6, okay? Notice that you can have a very good conductivity, right? We're talking about 11.1 Siemens per centimeter. Okay, that sounds pretty good. Where's the big catch? Well, you have this A as part of the equation, okay, which makes it really toxic. Okay, I don't know about you guys, but I wouldn't want to bury that on the planet. Okay, so of course, with that toxicity comes some advantages like the SEI is very stable, it has excellent anodic and cathodic stability. So you can see, maybe, and I'm just thinking aloud here, maybe for, maybe a space application, maybe some military application, maybe you would want that type of salt, okay, in your system. Because, why? Because you would have a very high conductivity, very high stability, and at least for those situations. Okay, you can see, well, some of the other ones, I shouldn't go through all of them. Again, I encourage you to read the paper. I should probably talk about one of the most commonly used, which is LiPF6. Okay, notice that again, in a mixture of ECDMC, you have a typical conductivity of 10.7 Siemens per centimeter, which matches, or at least it compares very well with ECDMC with LICLO4. Okay, it's even higher, right? There's a reason why people use LIPF6, okay? Because of the high conductivity, okay? And of course, these two chemistries are, because of that, because of the high conductivity, they provide with the highest possible, or at least one of the most commercial ones. And of course, it shouldn't be surprised that it's thermally unstable at high temperatures, which is one of the things we've been discussing. And in this case, causes tremendous difficulty in preparation and purification, which probably makes it expensive. Okay. Anyway, those are just examples of the salts, as you will see on the next slide. Okay. They will show you the conductivity, the ionic conductivity of a specific electrolyte, but they also tell you what salt they use, because without the salt, the base-like conductivity could be very poor. Okay. And, well, in this case, at least for this figure, they tell you that they put 1 mole per liter in this system, right? So you have, in this case, you have to be very specific on how you got that measurement, okay? Okay, this is a polyethylene oxide electrolyte, and notice that in this case they use LITF, okay? And, well, the beauty about this polymer-based electrolyte is that it performs the best when it's in an amorphous state. Why is this? Because I think the density of defects that you have for the salt and the electrolyte mixture to perform better occurs under these conditions, right? You have the highest number of defects that allows for those ions to transport through, okay? So if amorphous works the best, obviously if you crystallize it, the conductivity will then decrease. So you want to basically avoid the degree of crystallization, okay? And typically what people do is they throw in some additional phase to suppress that crystallization, or at least put obstacles for those crystallines to keep propagating in the system, okay? Or they make the polymer change so long, okay, that in order for them to realign themselves and into a crystalline structure, it'll take much more energy for the system in order to get there, okay? And of course, if you increase the degree of cross-linking between the polymers, you will also decrease the chances of those chains to align themselves into a crystal, okay? So again, these are just games that people play to increase the conductivity. Notice where that conductivity is, right? Notice that these are basically exponents in that conductivity. Okay, we're talking about here two orders of magnitude. No, actually more. We're talking about six orders of magnitude where that conductivity can reach just between 130 degrees and 0 degrees centigrade. Okay, well, of course, we live over here. Okay, and that gives you an idea as to what is the order of magnitude of that conductivity. Okay, pretty low. Okay, all in all. Okay, the best one seems to be that reference over here, okay, where they give you what the ratio is of that specific salt that they put in there. Okay, I put this one up next because it gives you an idea, okay, of what the most commercial one would deliver, okay? And let me just go again up. So notice again, somewhere between -2 and -8. Okay, for the previous system. Okay, which corresponds to this bit over here. And the ones that again, you will see, okay, using PBDF or LIPF6, notice that we're basically within one order of magnitude, okay, of that conductivity. In comparison to the previous conductivities, we're talking about a roughly flat behavior in conductivity. However, notice that those conductivities are reported only to 80 degrees C. Okay? There's a reason for that. Okay? Okay, and you can even fit lines to those equations, right? Because it basically the response is so, in this case, well developed that it really gives you that contribution, right? That contribution to conductivity, okay? And And well, different mixtures of EC or PC will give you different type of behavior. Okay? Okay. Here's another one. This is PEO with LIBOB. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump that fast. Okay, and in this case, PEO with LIBOB or LICLO4, it really brings the connectivity up, okay, but you still have a wide range of behavior in comparison. Okay, probably the best one, it seems, to LICLO4, and you can see you can reach very high temperatures. Okay, but the order, it's basically an order of magnitude lower as compared to what we had before. Okay? This case, polymer base. And this is PEO, as it's being used with all these different combinations. And in this case, in this particular case, PEO can actually give you pretty good conductivity, right? You can see here, for this set of data, PEO with PMMA, you can see you can have a pretty good behavior between 20 degrees and 90 degrees. Okay? Again, I'm just, you know, showing you the main materials, okay? Where the previous data you can see is way down there. Okay? Always there as a point of reference. Okay? I'm almost done here. Let's see. Oh no, very good timing. And these conductivities, you can see here, give you, depending on how it's done, if it's in liquid form or in gel form, you can also have different types of response, right? You can see the conductivity can go from all the way from 10 to the minus 8, okay, all the way to 10 to the minus 2, 10 to the minus 3, as you can see here, okay? If you look carefully, you will find out that using LIPF6, the other salt that I was referring to, LICLO4, those will give you the highest performance. And so it's not surprising that those are the ones that are most commercially used. Okay, even when you're trying to suppress dendrite behavior, you're trying to suppress SEI formation. Okay, even though those chemistries may favor the appearance of the site reactions, you try to find an additional thing that will suppress its formation. Okay? I think that's pretty much it. There will be a homework next week where the idea will be to take the model that we have come up with and combine it with some of these data so you can have a feel of how the numbers work out to give you the different types of responses. Okay? And I think, oh yes, I forgot about this. This is just an idea on how, in this case, this is ECDMC. You can see that curve. It's ionic conductivity as a function of concentration. Okay? And notice that if you have a ratio of 1 to 2, it's not going to be the same that you have a ratio of 2 to 1, okay, of ECDMC. And given that ratio, if you start changing the salts, okay, what you will find is that you will have actually a peak on that contribution of conductivity. Okay, so depending on how you tune it, okay, how you make that electrolyte, you will can have numbers that can vary from 0.5 to basically to 3.25. Okay, in this case, in Siemens per centimeter. Okay, so keep that in mind. Okay, when you're doing the homework or when you're considering a design. Okay? Any questions? Yes?
So from those previous bunch of slides, it looks like from ionic conductivity standpoint, the higher temperature, the better, isn't it?
Yes and no. Yes.
But I was kind of confused because I always thought the optimized temperature of around 25 degrees C is based on the ionic conductivity, the S by. It doesn't seem to be that way. So I don't
right.
understand why.
Yeah, so... Right. Yeah, so... So 25 degrees typically is the temperature where, you know, you and I are living, right? 25 degrees C. Okay. If you deviate from that, you go all the way over here, okay, that organic electrolyte can start decomposing, forming these additional phases that could be explosive, and then the system fails. Okay. So even though you would get the highest conductivity there, you will also be at highest risk over there. Okay? I think what you want is to combine the use of your battery with some heat transport, fast heat transport setup. Okay? Somehow you manage to get rid of the heat, so you bring it down somewhere in this window. Okay? Even though we're living at a temperature locally, I guess my laptop right now is, I am pretty sure it's not at 25 degrees C. Maybe it's somewhere between, I don't know, 45 and maybe 35 degrees. Okay? It's somewhere there because as I'm using the charge, heat is being dissipated, and that the table underneath, I'm sure it's just not helping for that heat to go away. So, of course, the fans of the computer are trying to help me also get rid of that heat. And if that doesn't happen, I can really heat up my computer, right, and heat up the batteries and favor these side reactions to develop. And if I'm not careful under the right conditions or the wrong conditions, depending how you look at it, I can actually make this thing fail in not a good way. Okay? Does that? Okay. Yes.
I have a couple of questions. First, tortuosity should not have any effect on the electronic conductivity.
In the cathode, it should. In the cathode, it should have consequences because your particles of active material, say your iron phosphate, manganese oxide, or cobalt oxide, they're electronically insulating. Okay, so if the contrast of conductivity between the electrolyte and the particles is very large, the electrons will still try to transport around them. Okay. That said, the conductivity of the particles is also lithium content dependent. So as you are putting more lithium in it, maybe the band, you're developing new levels in your band structure. And in some cases, you can close the gap and actually make the particle conductive. In some cases, okay, some anode materials these days actually have a insulating conductive transition, which actually allow you to keep the conductivity or the ohmic losses in check. Okay, that is possible. Okay, but in this very general situation, typically particles of active material are thought of as insulating. The graphite, you know, it's conductive. So in comparison with the particles of active material, you can think of those as being very conductive. Okay, but then you still have to compare them to the electrolyte. Again, all we care about is this relationship that we derive over here. If you remember, there was another term over here, okay, where we assumed that the active material was insulating, and that's only possible if the contrast between the properties is very large. If they're comparable, then I actually have to account for that term too. And if they're, of course, the same value, then, well, this whole thing goes away, right? Then you really have just an effective conductivity of the overall structure. Okay?
And also, people talk about scattering of electrons due to lattice vibration at green boundaries. Mm-hmm. Is there any similar thing of scattering of ions? Like, what happens when ions hits a green boundary? Does it scatter or does it...
Right. Yeah, so when you have grain boundaries for the ions, typically you have a different types of defects at the boundaries. So we in the same way we're talking about diffusivity and the bulk of the material, you should also talk about grain boundary diffusivity, grain corners or grain edges diffusivity. And they should be different because we're talking about the structure of the material is different there, so they hopping rate is going to be different. Okay, the energy barrier from one defect site to another one will change. So, and if you combine it with what we have over here, obviously it should give you very different conductivity, in this case ionic conductivity rates. It could actually be higher. And I haven't talked about characterization techniques, but there's techniques like electrochemical string microscopy where they can show that at grain boundaries you have a higher intercalation rate as a result, or at least the expected result is that the diffusivities of those defects is much higher than as compared to the bulk of the grains. So, yes, it does play a role. Mm-hmm. Okay, and any other questions? Okay, then we're going to stop right here, and we'll just talk about the next topic, next lesson. Thank you.